Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. The inaugural pitch at Nationals Park to mark a new era of Washington baseball. The President of the United States.
Such, I pretend too much. This song goes out to George Bush.
One can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to more.
Anyway, you get the picture. You get the picture. It's a tragedy what this man has done to this country. A tragedy from top to bottom, and you've seen nothing yet. The financial markets are roiled. Maybe we haven't even seen the beginning of the end or the end of the beginning. I'm reading a book that says the trillion-dollar meltdown has just begun. The banks are only the beginning. I have told you for well over a year that wars cost money. Wars have bankrupted sovereign nations before. I have told you that the reason this country is in financial trouble, the number one reason, is because of the war. You cannot spend this kind of money for this long a period of time without getting back any of the spoils of the war, which in this case would have been oil, without bankrupting the treasury, which is exactly what's happened. That's number one. Now, if that was the only problem, it would be bad enough, but it isn't the only problem. The bigger problem is the destruction of the United States Marine Corps under George Bush. When I watch the Military History Channel, which I do every night for some reason, I watch it every night. And to be honest with you, I see bravery that's incomprehensible. I see men flying World War II machines into the biggest battleships ever built, Japanese battleships, into flak that you can't imagine. They were suicide missions. And our boys did it. They did it for the pride of the job of being an American troop. Or I watch footage of the taking of Okinawa, where 250,000 people died, including 35,000 Marines. And I see the reenactment of a U.S. Marine holding a water-cooled machine gun in his arm, firing away a 10, 20-to-1 on a hilltop to protect his buddies who were wounded behind them. I ask myself, how could George Bush have done this to the U.S. Marines? Now, what am I talking about? I am talking about what they're doing to the U.S. Marines with this Haditha trial, and they're about to begin yet another Stalinist show trial about another city in Iraq that is unbelievable to me. Now, you know I've raised money for Lieutenant Colonel Chesani. I gave $35,000 of my own money. You gave over $200,000 to Colonel Chesani. He has not yet been exonerated. I know that the other day there was good news when another Marine was found not guilty. But how in the world can this be going on? How could more trials, more acquittals, and more scandals do anything but corrode the brightly burnished bayonets of America's number one fighting force? How in the world can George Bush permit this plague to have inflicted the United States Marine Corps unless, my friends, it's on purpose? And that's the part where I may just depart from this discussion, because there's no other explanation for why this is going on. To me, this is the number one problem, which is how long this has been going on, how long it has been going on. Now, Jack Murtha, Congressman Murtha, as you know, along with the left-wing slime bag from Time magazine, was the one who started this persecution of the U.S. Marines at Haditha. Murtha should be in jail for what he has done. If there was any justice in the world, Jack Murtha would be tried for slander, defamation, for the lives he has ruined, but he will not be. He sits on the top of the biggest pork barrel spending in the history of the United States of America, probably in the world, all as a result of these accusations he made against brave Marines at Haditha. So I ask myself, when does this end, and why is it going on? Why are there more trials every day? Why are there more acquittals every day? Why are there more invented scandals every day against the United States Marine Corps? The fact of the matter is, this is the 232-year-old fighting force, and it's under the greatest assault it's ever faced. It's a greater assault than it faced at any time in World War II, or in Vietnam, or in Korea, or it faces in Iraq. This assault is coming from Jack Murtha and the Defense Department itself. I'd like to know why it's happening. I want to know what you think. Why is the Pentagon following the administration lies in line? Why are they attacking our own troops and the U.S. Marines? Now, if you want me to engage in a discussion of why the U.S. Marines are being attacked like this by George Bush, I could invest some of my paranoia in such a discussion. And where it will end up is they want to destroy the one arm of the U.S. military that might stand up to a fascist government. And I mean, I'm telling you exactly what I can think. There may be some dark maniac inside the reaches of the White House who says, you know what? They're liable to be on to us soon, guys. And there's only one arm of the government, of the military, that might stand up to us, and that would be the Marines, because they've been incorruptible in their 232-year history. So let's distract them with these show trials. But you see, I can't engage in this kind of discussion because there's no way to prove or disprove my theory. But why is it that with the commander-in-chief being President George W. Bush, a man who has made so much, taken so much mileage out of this war and taken so much mileage out of his pride in the Marines and in the other military, why does this commander-in-chief permit this to go on? These are false charges. Every last one of them are false charges. So that's one of the big stories. Now, tied into these false charges against the Marines are the phonies who have taken credit for 9/11 bravery that never occurred. And there's a story from the Daily News on MichaelSavage.com that's really worth looking at. 9/11 con man lied to meet celebrities. His name is Fred Parisi, the con man who falsely bragged he helped rescue thousands as a New York cop on 9/11 and began a foundation to help sick workers, wanted nothing more than to meet so-called celebrities, such as the low-class lowlifes from The Sopranos, who are probably celebrities in pizzerias in New Jersey, but I can guarantee you outside of west of the Hudson River, nobody would recognize them. Now, what's interesting to me is the story's good. Con man used claims of being 9/11 responder to get close to celebrities. Great story from the Daily News newspapers. I say I linked it up. But I want to read you what one person wrote to the Daily News from a man named Calico. He says, this creep, meaning this false 9/11 responder, this creep did pretty much what Giuliani did to the tune of several millions. What the heck? Giuliani used the 9/11 rescue efforts to cover up for his 2 years of denial for better functional communications devices that indeed brought about the deaths of some firefighters unable to communicate with others. Then Giuliani stood by asking the experienced and trained professionals what they were doing, giving cameras and microphones time to settle on him so he could say, yes, carry on, and delayed the rescue efforts while meddling, grandstanding, primping, and prancing in front of the news cameras. Giuliani then went on a speaking tour throughout the states, earning several millions, calling himself America's mayor, but he did not reimburse New York City for illegal use of public funds from different city departments and agencies to have his bimbo sperm bank chauffeured by NYPD personnel who also carried her bags like errand boys. Parisi and Giuliani, two excuses for human beings making money off the dead. So, you see, it's interesting that the newspapers are on to this guy we never heard of, this fake 9/11 responder, a fake hero. But they won't talk about Giuliani, whose campaign, as you well know, has disappeared from history because I told you. See, I don't live in New York. I'm originally born there, But that's where my grandfather, the immigrant, landed when he came from the old country. I was the pioneer in the family. I went out from the original point of landing. I went very far, and now I've been settled in the San Francisco area since 1974, as many have gone beyond where their grandparents lived. There's nothing wrong with staying with you where your grandparents or great-grandparents docked. That's not the point. The point is that because I have many perspectives within me, the perspective of the old world, the perspective of an immigrant son, the perspective of a New Yorker, the perspective of an ex-New Yorker, the perspective of a San Franciscan, the perspective of a scientist, the perspective of a father, because I can look at the world through multidimensional lenses, or many lenses, excuse me, I can tell you in advance of what's going to happen is going to happen, and I'm usually right. I'm rarely wrong. And I told you when Giuliani began his campaign, I have nothing against the man personally. I don't know him. I never met him. I don't want to meet him. That's not the point. I told you it's a waste of your time to even think he could win. I said he does not play well west of the Hudson River. Now, if you want to ask me about this election, I have very strong opinions about it, and I can tell you exactly right now what's going to happen short of anything further happening. But let's go back to the main story. Why is George Bush and operatives within the Defense Department persecuting the United States Marine Corps? I'll be right back. Savage. You know, it is my birthday. I frankly never thought I'd live to be this age, I'll be honest with you. And I look back, I can't believe the century has turned and I'm still here. I remember being a kid. You know, when you're a kid, you look forward to years ahead of you sometimes if your mind drifts. And I was always a thoughtful, introspective type of person. I'm talking about the 50s, 60s. I would say, I wonder if I'm going to really see the year 2000. Because my father died at 57, my grandfather at 47. You know, the coronary lineage is a disaster in my family. So it drove me into various fields of study. And consequently, I have to say there has to be a benefit to the nutrition that I have practiced and the vitamins and the nutritionals that I take all these years. And no doubt I picked up some of my mother's genes in the sense that she lived to 88. So having said all of that, here we are now. It's 2008. The years go by. And I sit and watch the world and I ask myself, what do I want to say on the radio today on my birthday? I mean, what's the significance of it? So people say, well, why don't you do like what you did in the past, have various people call in? I said, you know what? Radio has changed. The world has changed. The audience doesn't want that anymore. The days of the ha-ha talk radio, let's have a good time. I'm Clarabelle, you know, with the horn mixed in with Sirius, is over. I'm telling you, those days are gone. They said, well, what do you mean? I said, here's what I mean, and I've rarely been wrong. I can sense an audience as well as anybody in this business, if not better. I have a fifth, sixth, and seventh sense about you, the listener. And what I'm sensing is you don't have time. You resent people who are just playing around with the media because you don't have the time for it. Things are terrible right now. Many of you have lost your jobs. You've lost your houses. You're afraid of the banking crisis. You don't know what's coming tomorrow. If you're going to invest any of your mental energy in listening to talk radio, you better get something for your money is what I'm thinking, you know. So I thought, well, okay, so stack up the importance of the articles to yourself, Michael. And I said, well, the thing that protects me every day, the one element of my society is the U.S. military and the police. Now, we already know what's been done to the American police in America, how their hands have been tied behind their back, how the criminal has more rights than the policeman. It's been written about to such an extent that I don't want to repeat it. Cops are getting knocked off all over the country because of the rules of engagement, written primarily by the scummiest class in America, the vermin of vermin, which are the left-wing lawyers who should be put into Abu Ghraib with hoods over their head, as far as I'm concerned. If I had the power by executive order, I would round up every member of the ACLU and of the National Lawyers Guild, and I'd put them into a prison in Guantanamo, and I'd throw the key away. Or I would reopen Devil's Island, and I'd put everyone in the ACLU onto Devil's Island. I swear to God, that's what I'd like to do to save this country. But you see, I fantasize. That's another one of my flaws, is I live in a fantasy land that can never be. So I say to myself, okay, we know what's going on with the police. The police are as hamstrung as a citizen is in defending himself. If a man breaks into your house and you shoot him when he's about to hurt you, you have a good chance of losing everything, even though you are in the rights to have shot him. You have to defend yourself in this crazy nation, again, because of the vermin lawyers on the left and the rotten stench from the bench in the legal profession. No, the number one problem right now, the looming threat, is China. And we know China has millions of men to waste. You got a country with that population. You got a country with that number of people. They have several hundred million men to waste. We only have several hundred million people in its entirety. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? They're not our friend. China is the threat of all threats. It's not the 400-pound gorilla. It's the billion-man army, my friends. It's the billion-man army, and we have a military that is the best in the world that our own Defense Department, our own president, the so-called commander-in-chief, is doing everything he can to weaken their resolve, to make them think twice before they fire a weapon in Iraq. And then if they do their job a little too well, he persecutes them with trials that cost $30, $40 million against the Marines. I said, there it is. There's your story today, Michael. Tell the American people to get on top of it fast. Tell America to start buzzing about this, not about Hillary versus Obama, the shadow candidates who are going to go nowhere. Let me tell you right now, they'll be on the dustbin of history after this is all over. No one will remember them. Obama is like a department store dummy that nobody will remember. He's an invention to begin with, and he's an invention that will be put onto the heap of toys that people tried before to hoodwink the American people. As far as Hillary goes, she crashed and burned last week when the whole world, including the vermin on the left who supported her all these years, saw her for the naked, bald liar that she is with that Bosnia story that she was ducking for cover. They have destroyed each other. The American people haven't been heard from yet. All you've heard from are the jerks in the media, and they're telling you that they're going to win. Now, McCain is no hero to me. McCain is no bargain to me either. But I got news for you. If it's McCain versus them, there's no question who I would vote for. And I don't think the difficulty is going to be in anyone else's mind out there either, given the choices. So having said all of that, what I'd like you to start asking yourself is Bush out to destroy or weaken the U.S. Marines? And if the answer in your mind is affirmative, then why? Did you hear what I just said to you? It's a crazy idea. It's a crazy story, but no crazier than me attacking illegal immigration in 1994, which everybody is taking credit for
Savage.
Now.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well. My need
is such.
I pretend too much.
It's a great song. You know, I was in the car the other day, Saturday, with the dog. He thought I was crazy. I turned it off. I was playing the Platters on a CD. I never sing in a car. I'm not one of those nuts you see going by singing with a dog in a car. Saturday, I was a nut in the car singing with a dog in the car. He didn't know what to make of it. I've always wondered who the people were who sing to records or to music in a car. I became one of them. It felt good, to be honest with you. It felt good to become like a normal person for 10 seconds. Well, here I am, not a normal person, just a talk show host, which is about as abnormal as you can get. It's a very small fraternity of people in talk radio, national and local. And the world is changing under everybody's feet, including our feet. Newspapers are going bust. They're firing people who should have been fired 10 years ago, like the jerk who ran the Chronicle into the ground. It's too little too late. He should have been thrown out in the 90s when we saw he was making it into a newspaper. This guy turned it into a personal, a sheet for his buddies. Everything gay and lesbian friendly, everything anti-military, anti-police. Idiot reporters who report crimes and don't show a race of the perpetrator or a race of a victim, always by no one. No one knows who does anything in San Francisco. Everyone walks around with, I see no evil, I hear no evil, I speak no evil, except against conservatives. That's the city I live in. Now, in talk radio, that's a whole separate topic for another day. The topic I am talking about today is the great pretender, George Bush. I voted for the man twice, reluctantly. I certainly didn't want Al Corleone, and I knew that Gore was a bigger phony than anyone had ever seen. Can you see what happened over the weekend? Al Gore waits for the spring thaw to begin, to come out of hiding, out of hibernation, and start hawking the lie about global warming again. Waits till the spring thaw. Think about it. This guy hasn't been seen for 3 months in the heart of the winter, and one of the hardest winters we've seen in 60 years. All of a sudden, Al Gore is seen again at the first thaw, like the fraud he is. And who does he hire? He hires Al Sharpton and Pat Robertson and Newt Gingrich to pimp for him on the global warming lie. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I could not believe what I was seeing. Al Sharpton has to be one of the most fraudulent individuals on the world stage. Why in the world would he use an illiterate man like him to talk about an issue he has no understanding of? Do you think Al Sharpton took one course in science? Do you think he can understand? If I asked this guy Al Sharpton, why is the sky blue? He wouldn't be able to answer it. He'd talk about slavery. If I asked Newt Gingrich, why is the sky blue? The GOPAC tick would not be able to answer that question. I can guarantee you if I asked Al Gore, why is the sky blue and why are clouds white? He couldn't answer those questions. And yet this man is going to spend $300 million with these prostitutes, these intellectual prostitutes, you know, walking around the world lying about this. Now, Pat Robertson has always been a weirdo to me, but to think this man would sell his soul for a few dollars is unbelievable. Now, what does it tell you about Pat Robertson and all of the years you believed in him? What does it tell you about any of these people, these professional Republicans? These professional conservatives, what does it tell you about them? How they've lied to you and misled you that they'll sell themselves for a few dollars. This is amazing stuff, by the way, when you think about it. So all I can do is try to help the defenseless on this show. I realize that's about is just the thing I could do. So people said to me, what do you want to do today on your birthday? Well, after the show's over, you want to go to dinner? You know, I'm going to go sit in another dinner. Well, I need another dinner in my gut. That's what I need is another dinner. Great, another dinner. Like I haven't had it too many already in my life. So I said, you know what I'd really like to do? I'd like to drive to an orphanage and give them a $10,000 check. But I don't know of an orphanage. I couldn't find one. You see, with the advent of the welfare state and with the advent of people taking in children for government money, I don't think there are any orphanages anymore. Does anyone know of an orphanage that needs money? Do they have orphanages anymore in America? Do they still exist? I'd actually like to go to an orphanage and give them a check tonight. I tried to give a nun money a few weeks ago when I came out of the hospital. To this day, I haven't heard from her. I can't find her. And I spent the whole morning calling as far away as Utah. I reached various higher-ups in the nun world. I said, who was that woman outside? They didn't know, like, we think it's sister this, sister that. I said, I wanted to give nuns something. That's what I really would like to do. So then there's nothing I can do tonight to really justify being alive this long other than go on the radio and talk about the U.S. Marine Corps who was... They have done so much for this nation, you know, so much for this nation, for my freedom to speak on this show. And here is George Bush, Commander-in-Chief, who could have stopped this persecution of the U.S. Marines when it started. He could have taken Jack Murtha and said, you cut this out or I'll cut off your funding and we'll impeach you, Murtha. Or he could have gone and he could have brought charges against Tim McGurk of Time magazine, who ginned up the whole charge on the Haditha case, and he could have brought federal charges against him. But he sits there. He throws balls out at baseball games. I mean, this is what I'm trying to do here is wake you up. Something's wrong with this picture. Why is George Bush trying to destroy the U.S. Marine Corps or weaken it? What is involved here? There's nothing to explain this unless it's a totally conspiratorial concept. Nothing would explain it. You can't tell me he doesn't know what's going on. And so if he does know what's going on and he sees one case after another being thrown out after these guys' lives are ruined and it costs them millions of dollars that they have to raise in the private sector to defend themselves and the government's willing to spend $30, $40 million persecuting them, somebody is doing this to them. Why are they doing it to them? Houston, Texas. Tyler, you're on the Savage Nation. Your opinion, please.
Michael, your logic is too complex and it's too conspiratorial. The reason why the Marines are being treated the way they are is because they're winning the war, or they're trying to win the war too quickly, and they're winning it their way. Happy birthday, by the way.
What do you mean they're winning it their way?
They are fighting. If they had it their way, lower-level commanders, for example, colonels and below, would fight the war, the Iraq war, the same way that they fought World War II. That's the way you win a war.
That's right. When they took Okinawa, they killed, unfortunately, 110,000 civilians. Now, no one's saying we should kill 110,000 Iraqis. Now, why would we let this ragtag Mukta al-Sadr run to Iran and dictate a war from Iran right now in Sadr City when the U.S. Marines could go into Sadr City and flatten it in 2 days and take the city and clean it out of the nests of the enemy? Why are we not doing that?
Michael, there's an excellent analogy from history to explain why Bush is behaving the way he is, and that analogy is the behavior of Hernan Cortez when he arrived in central Mexico. Initially, when he encountered the Aztec Empire, he did not attack, destroy, and dismantle it. As a matter of fact, he took very specific steps to try to manipulate that empire. For example, he kidnapped their Emperor Montezuma. He disrupted the chain of command and the...
But what are you getting at? So, wait a minute. Where are we going with this? You lost me already.
The reason why he did that is because he wanted to preserve the Aztec Empire as a functioning enterprise to be handed over to the King of Spain. What I believe is that George Bush is doing something similar. He wants to preserve Iraq as a functioning enterprise to be given to some concern somewhere. Now I'm getting conspiratorial. Sorry.
Okay. Watch out. Watch out. Well, I don't have the answer, but something doesn't add up. This war has gone on too long, which is why the country is divided and why the treasury is broken. He bankrupted the treasury with a war that's gone on too long. There's no reason in the world this has gone on so long. No reason in the world. This Sadr City should have been taken out 2 years ago. And there's a way to do it and minimize civilian casualties. You paper the neighborhood. You tell the civilians to get out. First you have to cordon off the entire Sadr City with concertina wire. Then you paper it for 2 weeks in Arabic. Get out. We're going to bomb. We're going to carpet bomb the city. We're coming in. Everyone who is innocent, leave. And you let them go through checkpoints, and no one leaves with weapons. Don't you understand that? Now, why do I have to be the general to describe how this is done? I'm an armchair general? Well, tell me where I'm wrong. Go ahead. Make me the wrong party. Tell me I'm wrong. You make them go through checkpoints. I don't care if it takes 6 months. Everyone gets out of there. The only people staying are the psychos who are tied into the Hitler of our time and Ahmadinejad in Iran. You then go in with B-52s and you carpet bomb the entire Sadr City. And after there's nothing moving, you bring in tanks with bulldozer platforms on them, and you grind the rubble into the ground. And if anything's moving after that, you pull it out and flamethrow it like they did in Okinawa. Then you pave it over and you build a new city. That would have been the end of the insurgency in Sadr City. But it seems to me they don't want an insurgency to end. That's what bothers me. Chad, Houston, Texas, go ahead, please.
Michael, Bush is not only against the U.S. Marines. I'm beginning to think he's against the U.S. in general. Having served in the Marine Corps, I think it's just another symptom of trying to break the morale of the American people, break the economy, break our will to fight this war, break the morale of the Marine Corps till America feels inept. I think what Bush is doing is almost, he looks at us like a product that's at the on the bell, tail end of a bell curve, and we're going to be merged into something else. And,
Well, a lot of people fear that, and we're considered the fringe in America. We're not the norms who talk on CNN or Fox News or write for the New York Times or the LA Times. But it seems to me there are several million people who have this idea about the Bushies. Why do we have this idea, Chad?
Well, I mean, going back, I'll use a buzz phrase that I'm sure he and his father know, order out of chaos. The world's being remade over into something that we all feel.
Is it possible that George Bush is a complete idiot rather than this psychologically intense? Is it possible that the man doesn't know what he's doing? I mean, the man was the bad son. He had a near-do-well youth. Everybody knows that. He had a near-do-well youth. He was the weaker of the children. The family itself saw the younger brother, Jeb, as the stronger one, the steadier one, and the son most likely to become president. So now they pick the weak son, the son that was the drinker, the runaround, and he's made into the president, right? And so what are the choices and decisions that has led George Bush to this point where we have a busted treasury, almost a busted currency? He's breaking the U.S. Marine Corps with these persecutions. This is just the beginning of what we see. Why is this going on is what we the people are asking, and how does it end? Who steps in to stop this? I don't have the answer, honestly. Medford, Oregon, Jennifer, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I was just checking out your website, and I saw Teddy's Corner, and I saw Teddy with a little white poodle, and I was wondering if he had a little girlfriend, or who's that other white dog with Teddy?
Let's see. I'm turning it on now. There's Teddy running. There's Teddy smiling. Oh, the little white one on the wooden floor?
Yeah.
That's his. Well, okay, it's his companion. Teddy's 10 pounds. She's 2 pounds. Teddy is the movie star. She's the dummy. Teddy, you know, like sometimes they get a goat for a dog, for a horse as a companion in the stall. She's like Teddy's goat. We try our best to turn her into a full dog, but she barks at everybody. She yaps. You take her in a department store, she goes insane. She can't do any tricks. If I come to her with food, she runs away the other way. She does everything wrong, okay? And Teddy looks at her like, what are you doing? They're your friends. They're just trying to give you food. But she's sort of the companion. I mean, you got to love her even though she's retarded.
She sounds like a fine
dog. She's the retarded friend. I mean, she's like a retarded dog. I'm convinced she's retarded.
I like retarded.
Well, okay, I don't mistreat her. I try my best, but, you know, it's hard dealing with a retarded dog. That's who she is. He's the circus dog. This dog could do any trick in the world after one or two, you know, instructions. This one, the other one can't do anything. It barks, it yells, it screams. Thank you. Whoa. Play the great, no, play, I need some rock and roll now in the Savage Nation. I can't get better. I can't shake this pneumonia. No matter what I do, I get better than I get worse. It's been going on too long. Now they say 6 to 8 weeks. So I'm doing the best I can. I think I'm doing a fairly good show. I think that because the topics themselves are so frighteningly important, I'm doing a fairly good show. You know what I want to play right now? We had this strange case the other day of Condoleezza Rice Aroney talking about slavery as a birth defect. Now, the audio is poor, but it's worth listening to this clip four.
Africans and Europeans came here and founded this country together. Europeans by choice and Africans in chains. And that's not a very pretty reality of our founding. And I think that particular birth defect makes it hard for us to confront it, hard for us to talk about it, and hard for us to realize that...
Turn her off. You know, if it wasn't for her using the race card, she'd be an unknown piano teacher in Youngstown, Ohio, wherever she came from. I cannot believe she has the nerve to pretend she's a victim. Is there no shame in any of these leaders at any level? Are they so devoid of values and of character that they would resort to that? Again, I want to refer to a great American of African heritage who many of you have not heard about in an entire generation. As a kid, I was raised in New York City, and we had to read Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington wrote this in 1911, and... He founded Tuskegee University. He was a first-class scholar. And way back in 1911, he saw the race hustlers, both white and black. And he wrote about them. And I put it up on a running head on michaelsavage.com. And I'm going to read it to you. Because to me, Condoleezza Rice is a race hustler by what she said. She's exploiting her own people and trying to make whites guilty at the same time. And here is what Booker T. Washington said back in 1911. Quote, there is a class of colored people who make a business of keeping the troubles, the wrongs, and the hardships of the Negro race before the public. Having learned that they are able to make a living out of their troubles, they have grown into the settled habit of advertising their wrongs. I'm reading it slowly because that's how slow it is. Partly because they want sympathy, and you know what's coming, don't you? And partly because it pays. Booker T. Washington went on in his writings of the race hustlers. He said, some of these people do not want the Negro to lose his grievances because they do not want to lose their jobs, close quote. That goes out to Condoleezza Rice and all of the other race hustlers. I'll be right back.
Savage.
In this first hour, we've been talking about the attack upon the U.S. Marine Corps by the military itself, mainly the Defense Department, in senseless, meaningless, invented trials that are destroying the will of many of the men to fight, making them second-guess combat situations, which are very dangerous not only for the men themselves, but for the future of America in terms of our ability to wage war against a much more populous enemy, as will be the case, God forbid, with an engagement with China. And make no mistake about it, that's coming to a neighborhood near you quite soon. It's a nightmare scenario. But who is going to risk their life in a fight if they believe that after they kill the enemy, their own corps will turn on them and try them for murder or for a war crime? Tell me, would you do it? Why should the boys who have the guts to go into the Marines do it? And so, since Bush is the commander-in-chief, why doesn't he stop this persecution? Why is Jack Murtha not tried for slander? Why is Tim McGurk not hunted down and brought before a court of justice for having slandered these men in the Marines? But if you really analyze who Bush is politically, you have to go to Karl Rove. Now, Karl Rove, interestingly enough, was once very important. You notice he's been fired by Bush? Has anyone discussed Bush post-Rove, and Rove now as a spokesmouth for Fox News, as a contributor to the weird Fox News, which is the CNN of 5 years ago? Who is Karl Rove? Oh, that's a big story unto itself. Karl Rove was called George Bush's brain. He educated him politically. What's interesting is that Karl Rove was a self-educated man without education, and they're usually the most dangerous converts to a cause, just as the new religious converts are usually the most zealous. Watch out for the newly coined conservative, or the newly coined liberal, or the newly coined Islamo-fascist, or the newly coined other religious zealot. I'll be back to talk about these and other topics right here in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The inaugural pitch at Nationals Park to mark a new era of Washington baseball. The President of the United States.
Savage Nation. We're talking about a number of different things on the show so far, mainly why George Bush, as commander-in-chief, does not step in and stop the persecution of the U.S. Marine Corps. The answer is, in my opinion, because he's behind it. Now, you gotta understand what I'm saying by this. George Bush is an ultra-anti-nationalist. No one's used that phrase, so far as I know. You've heard the word ultra-nationalist. He's an ultra-anti-nationalist. George Bush believes in the end of the nation as you know it. He believes in stability as opposed to democracy. He does not believe in sovereignty, which is why he's broken our borders and keeps them open. And the single strongest element in protecting our sovereignty is the United States military, most notably at this time the U.S. Marine Corps, which is why they are seen as the greatest threat to the neoconservative internationalists who, again, are seeking a new world order where America is rolled into, let's say, one deck, one card in a deck of many, many nations. Now, why do I say such things to people who may think I'm crazy? I want to read you a paragraph from a book out called The Bush Tragedy by Jacob Weisberg that just came out from Random House, and he writes this. He's talking about former Soviet refusnik and now right-wing Israeli politician Sharansky. And Sharansky loved George Bush. He portrayed George Bush in a heroic light, comparing the war against terrorism to the struggle against the Nazis and the Soviets. And in this book that I'm reading from, he says this, Sharansky draws a contrast to Bush's father's notorious Chicken Kiev speech, telling the Ukrainians to avoid suicidal nationalism. Did you hear this? Bush's father told the Ukrainians to avoid suicidal nationalism, which he calls, quote, an unmitigated disaster. A people who were only months away from realizing their 300-year-old dream of independence were being told by the American president to forget about it, he writes. Sharansky, you see, had met the elder Bush in the White House in 1990 and was asked the disagreeable question of how the United States could help Gorbachev keep the Soviet Union together. The former dissident relates that Bush Sr. told him it would be better to have the Soviet nuclear arsenal remain in reliable hands than fall under the control of unknown leaders, even if they were popularly elected. To Sharansky, Bush 41's comments typified the immoral embrace of stability over democratic aspiration. So Bush Sr. tells the Ukrainians to avoid suicidal nationalism. Therefore, the Bush family, the Bush political hierarchy, does not believe in nationalism, including our own nationalism. That's why they broke the border with Mexico and keep it wide open, despite the fact that states are trying to seal that breach to save this country from disappearing entirely into a hodgepodge and a mass of multiculturalism and illegal immigration. So this may explain, for example, some of the weird things that Bush has done and is doing. If you put it in that context, and if you wanted to hold a discussion about it in that context, it starts to make sense. For example, why would he have agreed to sever Kosovo from Serbia when Kosovo has been part of Serbia since the 1300s? Why would he now be sending weapons to Kosovo when Kosovo is filled with a potentially radicalized Muslim population, particularly the Kosovo Liberation Army? Why would he be doing these things? Because he believes that nationalism is a dangerous thing. Now let's go to Israel itself. Why has Israel been weakened under George Bush? Which it has, make no mistake about it. They have a stooge there, Olmert, who you have to say is a puppet of the Bush administration, if anything else, who could not even win a war against Hezbollah, who had no air force, no heavy weapons, and no tanks. This is unbelievable that Israel couldn't do it, since Israel had one of the largest and most powerful militaries on earth. Why, again, did that happen? Do you think it happened by accident that the Israelis have been led down the primrose path of losing wars? The answer, again, is because the Bush vision of the world is a place where there is no national isms. There's a Strobe Talbot universe of a new world order, one world government. I mean, this is what I see going on here. I know this is so not in the can of, you know, like talk radio, Fox News, but it's my birthday, so forgive me for my musings. But that's what's going on, and that's why it's worth talking about, because I see it getting worse, not better. And you think that the meltdown of the markets 2 weeks ago was by accident? I don't think it was by accident at all. They let the greedy slime, the pirates of Wall Street, rape and pillage for all these years, and then they're wondering why it all fell down the house of cards? The federal government should have stepped in and stopped these hedge funds when they began. What do you mean you can buy and sell fiduciary instruments that are built upon nothing? What do you mean you can buy and sell, in essence, fake stocks without any down payment? What do you mean you're going to encourage by threatening to sue? The federal government, remember, threatened the banks. They threatened to sue legitimate commercial banks unless they lent money to people who could not afford houses. When I bought my first house, in 1974. I had saved all my life for a $9,000 down payment. It was every penny I had saved, scraped together, borrowed, to buy a $45,000 house. The bank wouldn't lend me the money unless I put down 20%. It was, I'm sorry, sir, we can't lend you the money. You need to have enough money, and you need to show that you have money to make the payments. Well, I understood it. I didn't like it. I sure would have liked the government to say, no down payment required. We'll give you 110% mortgage. Here's some cash to go out to buy yourself a new car on top of it all. I would have loved that, but I didn't have that, so I couldn't do it. So now the banks say, well, to the people all through the 90s and then again through the 2000 and on, we can't lend money to the various people. They don't have the money. And what happens? Al Sharptongue, Reverend Jesse High Jackson, threatened to sue the banks for, I think they called it greenlining, which was not giving loans to minorities. Well, it didn't matter whether the minority was a minority. It mattered that they couldn't afford the loan. They didn't have the down payment. That didn't stop the race hustlers from threatening lawsuits in cahoots with the Bush administration, who again also wanted loans to be given to, you guessed it, illegal aliens, primarily from Mexico, who were not only not citizens but had no down payment. The banks were again told, you're not allowed to even look into the country of origin of the borrower. If you do, we'll sue you under Title VII or whatever it was. So the federal government caused this housing bubble. And so when it all blew up, the federal government now steps in and says, oh, we're going to rescue the banks, the Wall Street private banks. That's what an investment bank is. It's a private bank that has no control over itself. And lo and behold, the architect of all of this is Hank Paulson, our great Treasury Secretary, who it just so happens was also previously the chairman and CEO, the CEO of an investment bank of Wall Street, who went through the go-go years without any regulation by the government, and now, of course, agrees to bail out his friends in Goldman Sachs and his friends in Lehman Brothers and elsewhere. To me, it's an act beyond piracy. This is beyond anything I've ever seen in my life, how they get away with it. I just don't know how they get away with this. So there's a lot of problems out there, and I figured you'd rather hear about this than other stuff. I don't know what else to talk about, truthfully, other than the really important things, and that's why I'm doing this. So if you care to talk about these things or any other topic, again, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Before I take your calls, let's begin this Savage birthday tribute done by David. Go ahead, please.
This is Graham Hancock with a special birthday tribute to Michael Savage. I have visited some of the people that Michael Savage has talked about over the years for their comments. Here is what they had to say on this auspicious occasion. First, we begin with Hillary Clinton. I would like to know, on behalf of Michael Savage, are you getting to the point of being exhausted from the attacks from your own Democratic Party?
I don't feel no ways tired.
I see.
I come too far from where I started from.
Now we go to Senator Ted Kennedy.
Okay, Senator, that's funny enough. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, this woman is it leaves you speechless. But she it's over with her. It's over. The last straw for even the slavish worshippers of the Clinton machine, the people who actually got them where they are, the jerks at Newsweek, the morons at Slate, the idiots at Salon, the schmucks at MSNBC, the Salenterates at ABC, CBS, and NBC. Even those Salenterates are saying, well, that issue last week with Bosnia, with the bald-faced liar, that was the last straw. Okay, Salenterates, great. I'm glad to see that you finally can crawl. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base. You know, I made a mistake in describing it. We were, you know, very much told by the Secret Service and the military that we were going into a war zone and that we had to be conscious of that. I was the first lady taken into a war zone since Eleanor Roosevelt. We certainly did take precautions. There is no doubt about that. And I remember that very clearly. But I did make a mistake in talking about it, the last time and recently.
Reverend Wright is somebody who is like a uncle or a family member who you may strongly object to what they have to say. But as he's about to retire, I have no intention of leaving the church itself.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
So those two speeches will be the seminal moments that the Democrat Party disappeared from victory. Because make no mistake about it, they're both finished. All McCain has to do is plod and get along and go along and be the middle of the rotor that he is, and he's going to win by 20 points, particularly if he chooses Romney as his running mate. There's no question in my mind that the American people haven't been heard from yet. All you're hearing from are the jerks who were just fired from Newsweek. It's funny to me that all of the chattering classes, so to speak, are the ones who are losing their jobs and will soon be sitting in cafes looking for work. You know, but there are only so many jobs at Home Depot, and I love the place. You know, how many reporters from Newsweek can work in the screw department at Home Depot? Not many, because they don't even know a Phillips head from a flathead. And so this intelligentsia class are still the ones telling you that Obama's surging ahead. He hasn't heard. There's been no election in the country. They're telling you who's going to win. You know, Obama, every day, Obama this, Obama that. A day doesn't go by with them not holding him up as a messiah. And to show you the con, on a related, on a non-related issue, you got Al Gore. 3 months no one saw him. He was hibernating like a bear because it was the coldest winter on record. One of the coldest winters on record. Totally blew his global warming hype up. All of a sudden, he waits for the spring thaw, and here he appears now, and lo and behold, he's going to spend $300 million of the money he scammed to promote the fiction of global warming. And who does he have on his team? None other than the GOPAC tick, Newt Gingrich, who makes my flesh crawl and always has. Pat Robertson, hello, combined with Al Sharpton. It's unbelievable to me that this could be going on in my lifetime. I just can't believe it. I doubt that Al Sharpton could answer the simplest question about meteorology or the weather itself, such as why are there four seasons? If I said to Al Sharpton, Al, okay, you're an expert now on global warming because Al Gore is giving you money. Can you explain why we have four seasons in some parts of the world and not such dramatic seasons in others? I'll bet you he could not explain to anybody about the rotation of the Earth proportionate to the axis of the Earth. I can guarantee you. Now you could ask him the next question, which would be on the sixth or seventh grade level, which would be, Reverend, can you explain why the sky is blue? Couldn't answer that one. But I guarantee you he'll be up on Fox News lecturing you on global warming and how we got to fix it or else we're all going to die. And what's sad about this is that the Republicans are nowhere to be heard on this. They're no longer putting up a fight. Even George Bush is for it. Now, you know why George Bush is suddenly for the theory of global warming, because it ties in with globalism. If he again can break down the sovereignty of a nation that has brains and stands up to the juggernaut of a new world order and says, take it and shove it. That's a UN hype in order to gain control of the economy and to impose restrictions on us from cradle to grave. We're not going to do it. We're not paying a global warming tax. Take a walk. See, that's not good for the Strobe Talbert view of the New World Order that George Bush is following. WOR, Eddie, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Hey, Michael. You know, it's funny. I was on hold all the time. You finally hit the nail on the head. So my point is kind of moot. I was saying this real simple reason why Bush has fought this war, dragged out, politically correct, is to break the country both financially and morally. It softened us up, so we'll embrace a socialist regime, which is definitely coming, whether it's the name of Obama, Clinton, or McCain. That's what's coming, because they're all...
Wait a minute. He wants to federalize the banks. That's, if that's not socialism, I'd like to know what is. You saw the story, didn't you, this morning, that he wants to use the Norwegian example of the banks. Did you see that story this morning at all?
I didn't. I actually digested my food today instead of getting...
Fed, here's the story. Fed eyes Nordic-style nationalization of banks. Many of you don't know what a socialist nation is. But the story is an important one. It came out of the Telegraph UK. The U.S. Federal Reserve is examining the Nordic bank nationalizations of the 1990s as a possible interim solution to the U.S. financial crisis. So step by step, day by day, Bush draws us into a world government and a new world order where we lose our sovereignty over our own nation. Broke the borders, broke the currency, now is looking into nationalizing the banks. When will he next nationalize our military and tell us that we're going to have UN troops in the United States because we can no longer trust the U.S. Marines because they're all baby killers? You expect to wake up to that one morning? The blue helmets in a neighborhood near you?
Savage.
Okay, now we're going to turn to my website, michaelsavage.com, with all the articles. There's a few good ones I just put up. One is from the Honolulu Advertiser, and it's an important one. Because that's where Barry, that's Barack Obama. He was known as Barry then before he decided to invoke the name Barack. Barry actually went to a very, very expensive private high school, Punahou High School, but he's coming across as though he was an impoverished youth. You see, his white grandmother, who he called a racist a few weeks ago, actually, in a soft way, the woman who raised him, he had the nerve to say she harbored racial tensions towards black men, was a wonderful woman. She's the one who sent him to Punahou. She was very, very successful as a banker at the Bank of Hawaii, according to the article that just came out, which I put up on michaelsavage.com. The article is called Obama's Tutu, a Hawaii Banking Female Pioneer. And there's a great telling picture of Barry Obama sitting with his grandparents, Stanley and Madeline Dunham, in New York City when Obama was a student at none other than Columbia University. And if you read this and you listen to what Obama has to say about his own grandmother, it's frightening to think that he would say that she was uncomfortable around colored people. The woman was anything but a racist. But it seems to me that he's learned the political game very well and that he will use anybody and anything to advance his career, which is, of course, why his campaign has really come, as they say, the wheels have come off his campaign, despite what the idiots at Newsweek who were losing their jobs or at Slate will tell you. The fact of the matter is the American people, after hearing Reverend Wright's hate speech and asking themselves why would a candidate for the presidency not have walked out, why would he have had such a race hater as Reverend Wright baptizes children, marry him, unless he agreed with them. That's what the people are saying. And I try to reverse it in a way that can make you understand why I'm harping on this. Let us say there's a Republican candidate, a white guy, who attended a church and he attended a church for 20-some-odd years and somebody found a tape of the preacher. And the preacher, it turns out, was a Grand Clavin in the Ku Klux Klan. He wore the white hat and burnt crosses. And he said horrible things about colored people and Jews and homosexuals in the church. Do you suppose the media would give that Republican a pass and say, well, you can't hold him responsible for what his preacher said? Do you suppose that that candidate would last so much as a minute, a nanosecond, a nanominute with the vermin in the media being who they are? You know he wouldn't. And so, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the goose. That's all. That's why we're going to talk about it. So there are some other great stories up on michaelsavage.com, which I don't know if I'm going to have the patience to go through all of them, but I suggest you look at them because we spent a lot of time up there. Here's one here. Vatican says that Islam has overtaken Roman Catholicism as the biggest single religious denomination in the world. Muslims have overtaken Catholics. That's a nice thought. That's a good one. That's why I say bring in more from the Middle East. Bring in more of them. There's another story. Is Bush out to weaken the Marines? Why? Rep Murtha's big lies weaken Marines. When will he pay? Charges dropped against Marine and Haditha case. You really have to educate yourself on this to understand. CARE trains FBI as new report cites links to terror. Doesn't stop them. They still hire this suspicious group CARE to train the FBI agents. Paulson unveils huge financial rules overhaul. He's trying to socialize the banks. And it's going on under the guise of stabilizing the banking system. They're literally going to socialize the banking industry right before your eyes. Right before your eyes, they're about to internationalize and socialize the banking industry as step one towards the Strobe-Talbert New World Order. So, you know, I can only do so much. I don't think do you want to hear any more of this or not? Can you handle this? You know, I got to tell you something. I'll take time out. I mean, what, I'm going to get two or three people? I don't know if you can handle any more of this. people are scared to death. This is like the Frito of presidents on one hand, or on the other hand, some would say, as I've said for several years, it's worse than that. I believe he's closer to the ex-king of Bavaria, the child king of Bavaria, who bankrupted the treasury. That's what really worries me, who built Schloss Herrenchiemsee in the mountains of Bavaria and bankrupted Bavaria, the Bavarian treasury. The war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, whether or not you agree with them, have bankrupted our currency. You know, I used to walk around as a kid. I didn't understand economics. What does a kid know? I remember working very hard on Saturdays with my father. I'd come home drained and dead. My friends were playing all day. I had to go into that horrible, disgusting, filthy market on Ludlow Street and clean bronzes in the basement using cyanide solution and live in my own fantasy world in that Dickens basement in order to get through the day without going crazy. But I did it because that's what I was expected to do. And I'm not complaining about it. It's just the life, it's the card, it's not so bad compared to what kids go through in this world. But looking back upon it, I think about what I thought as a kid. I had hours to think alone down in that basement. Then I'd drive home with my father in the car. Horrible, disgusting ride back to the house over the Kosciuszko Bridge, where if it was the summertime and you'd smell the Trun's Meat Factory in Greenpoint, the slaughterhouse for pigs, it was the worst smell on earth. It was not only the smell of slaughtered animals, it was the smell of the horror and the screams of a slaughterhouse, literally wafting up from the roadway. You had to hold your nose as you went over that bridge. But in those days, I formulated a lot of thinking. So I remember, I used to think, why do I have to work on a Saturday when the other kids I know don't? I said, well, your father needs help, and we can't afford someone to hire. So whatever, you're the kid, you have to do it. So I remember going around and looking. I'd see the grocer, I'd see the baker, I'd see the butcher in those days, and I'd say to myself, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was no money, if you didn't have money? Listen to this, how a kid thinks. And there's a reason I'm telling you this. Wouldn't it be great, I thought, if there was no money, and if you went to the butcher store, you say, give me a couple of lamb chops and a round of meat. And then he could come to your store, let's say if you're the vegetable man, he'd say, oh, give me a bushel of corn and give me some green beans. And I'd say, oh, that would be nice, I thought. Well, it took me a while. I must have been 7 years old when I was thinking about this. Till it dawned on me that not everybody would deal fairly. I said, well, what if the guy who owns the butcher store, you came in and you said, give me the two lamb chops, and you didn't have a store? Or what if the guy in the butcher store, you took the two lamb chops, and he came around to your store, and you told him, I don't have any more corn? So I said, no, that wouldn't work. But remember, this is a child. This was a child thinking. So I said, all right, money is the best way to figure this out. I mean, we're not living in an idealized commune. In a commune, that's how it would work. In a communistic society, that's how it works in theory, but it never worked that way in a communistic society. Now, why am I telling you this silly little childhood tale? Why am I telling you my boyhood views of the world, the world's economy? Because, and this is very important, many of the moronic intelligentsia today in academia who have never worked a day in their lives, many of the morons who write for the newspapers, the so-called intelligentsia, the intellectuals, literally still think the way I did when I was 7 years old. They think that it's all equal and we should all share. And so they think that I should pay more taxes. They think that I'm obligated to support illegal aliens. They think that I owe somebody a living who's too lazy or too stupid to make it for himself. You get the picture. So that's the danger that we're in here, is that we have an uneducated and beyond naive intelligentsia in America that is more out of touch with the world than is the government itself. That's my birthday tale. Could I have some birthday music now? Let's see. Give me something to hear, some music, because the day will be over, and then it'll be another night, and then it'll be another day. That's all right. It's as good as ever. What are you going to do? Already. I'm not in the mood. I don't know what it is. I'm in a somber mood. I'm not sad, not depressed. I don't think anybody wants any fun in radio anymore. I don't. Maybe it's me. Could be me. I don't know what it is. I don't think it's time for fun right now. My gut instinct tells me everyone's miserable, depressed, frightened. They don't know what Bush is going to do next to destroy the country and rip off its sovereignty. They see a broken border, a broken economy, a broken treasury. He attacks the Marines with one case after another and doesn't step in. He goes and throws a ball out at a baseball field and everyone boos him. They don't like this. The world is a frightening place right now, you know. So I think talk radio certainly has a very important role to play. We're an institution of this country, irrespective of those who are going to be on welfare soon, the intelligentsia from Newsweek and Salon and Slate and the other places that won't be around in two years. We'll be here. I'm telling you, we'll be here. Talk radio is going to be around for a very long time for a number of reasons. One, you can drive around in a car and hit one button. It doesn't require very much navigation to get. Two, it's free. Three, it's familiar. Four, it's interactive. As far as satellite radio goes, you think people are going to pay to hear Whoopi Goldberg? Do you think they're going to pay to hear a guy talk about panties and brassieres anymore? Don't you think he's kind of like 80s and it's over already with the balloon man? How much can you listen to him talk about brassieres and panties? What kind of man are you to listen to that? You know, shape up already. That moron fleeced you with that stupidity. By the way, about 11 state attorney generals have rightly are going to sue the federal government for having approved the merger between XM and Sirius because it's a monopoly. The federal government's supposed to protect against monopoly formation. How in the world this went on? With the Justice Department today, you can get anything you want. If the price is right, I suppose, whatever that means. So I'll take your calls. That's all. Leon, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, happy birthday and everything as well. I listen to you quite frequently, and I agree with everything you say. Former Marine, retired Army.
Doesn't it bother you that George Bush doesn't step in and stop this persecution of the U.S. Marines for crimes they never committed?
You should have done it a long time ago.
All right. Well, I'm not a former Marine, okay? And I know what's right, and I'm doing everything I can to awaken the American people. And there are others doing good work on this. But there's more that needs to be done, which is, damn it, why doesn't George Bush stop the persecution of the U.S. Marines? That's what needs to be done. Number two, Jack Murtha should be dragged before a court for what he's done, for defamation, for slander, for destroying the reputations of these brave Marines. Tim McGirt, Time Magazine, should be dragged into court and sued for defamation and slander, in my opinion. That's what I think. That's what needs to happen. So we can talk about this. What else do we have? Savage's eye camera. I have new pictures. They haven't gone up. Let's see. Debunking global warming. I love the way I presented it. No one did as good as me. Remember I said to Al, where's Al Gore for 3 months? Because it was the coldest, one of the coldest winters on record. The con man disappeared. Now, all of a sudden, like the spring thaw, he comes out in the spring to tell you about global warming. And who does he have with him? None other than the GOPAC tick, the disgraced, debased Newt Gingrich, who only Sean Hannity can respect, who I call the GOPAC tick in the political zoo. I was on to Newt Gingrich a long time ago. That guy, I feel like I need a brown soap bath every time he would appear and speak. Alongside him is Pat Robertson and Al Sharpton. They're all friends again. All of a sudden, they're friends sitting on the same side of the aisle. Now, you got to ask yourself, when you wake up and you see a street hustler like Al Sharpton sitting next to Pat Robertson, sitting next to Newt Gingrich, all paid for by Al Gore, what does that tell you about all the years you were misled by Newt Gingrich and Pat Robertson? What does it tell you? What does it tell you about the entire establishment? Can you trust any of them? No, you can't. No, you can't. But you can trust me. And why can you trust me? A, I'm not a politician. B, I literally carved out the independent identity on radio long before the others even knew what the word meant. They were all Republican water carriers, every last one of them on the conservative dial. Then all of a sudden they saw, I'm an independent. Lou Dobbs, a big independent. Suddenly he's an independent. Every other day he's interviewing somebody from CNN, the big independent. It's unbelievable to me. How can you trust any of these people? I got to ask myself, how do the people take this? How do they take it? Are the people that stupid? I don't know if people are that dumb or they're not even listening. But I have an obligation to give you one man's opinion. You may not agree with me. You may find it offensive. You may agree or disagree. I'm not asking you to call and tell me, you know. But if you want to talk about Goldman Sachs, if you want to talk about the nationalization of the banks under Bush and Paulson, if you want to talk about the bailout of a few investment banks on Wall Street with taxpayer money and a middle finger to the homeowner, you can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'll be here.
Savage.
the Savage Nation. You know, I don't know whether it's me projecting my mood or actually sensing what the mood of the country is. It's at this point very hard to tell. I believe that the mood of the country is totally different than it was 6 months ago or even 3 months ago. And I'm reflecting, I think, what I feel, not only in my own life, but for this country. The future is very uncertain. And this is sort of a guide for the perplexed. That's how I see it, and I feel I have an important role to play in this, and that's why I'm doing it. Let's go to Binghamton, New York. Johan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. My opinion on the XM-Sirius merger is, yes, it may be encroaching on being a monopoly, but it's still a free market, and we can choose not to subscribe to their services.
Wait. You know that you're purposely obfuscating the discussion. How can you have a free market when there's only one satellite company?
You can get all the music and programming elsewhere that are offered on there. So, I mean,
Wait. That's not the point, though. But there would be only one satellite radio company in that business, in that end of the business. There'd be only one company. That's a monopoly by any definition, and a government's supposed to prevent the monopoly from forming, not encourage it.
Precedent. Yeah, I guess you're right.
Well, it's not that I know anything about the management of XM or Sirius. I don't know them. I'm sure they're all wonderful, great, fine, superb, superlative people. The point is the federal government has a role, and one of the roles it has is to prevent monopolies from forming. What would happen if all the insurance companies of America merged? GEICO merged with a Progressive Insurance, merged with whoever the insurance carriers are, and there was one insurance company left in the United States of America. You wouldn't say that's good for the insurance business. I mean, for the consumer, would you?
No.
Thanks for the call. Don't you understand what's going on here? The Justice Department, through lobbying by XM and Sirius, has caved into them. So 11 states' attorney general have said, "Hey, wait a minute now. We're not going to let this go on." So it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. And by the way, both companies are horrendously mismanaged in my estimation. They're losing hundreds of million dollars a year, number one, primarily because they overpaid for the balloon man, but not solely because they overpaid for the balloon man, the most overpaid talent in the history of the media, but because they have talentless hacks who have no advertisers at all on their channels. I mean, who would pay to listen to Whoopi Goldberg? She failed in terrestrial radio. Why would you listen to her on satellite radio? Who's on those shows that anyone would listen to? You know, I was on satellite radio for a while until I told my syndicator to get me off there because I'm not going to give it to them for next to nothing. And I'm a total and absolute believer in terrestrial radio. It's free. It's accessible. The people know where to find me. That's where I am. That's where I began in radio, and that's where I'm going to end in radio, right here on terrestrial radio, which is going to have a phenomenal, I'm very bullish on terrestrial radio. Right now, people are frightened. They don't know where it's going to be. They say this, they say that. They're all wrong. Radio is going to have a huge comeback for almost the same reasons I just mentioned. It's familiar, it's accessible. And it's there, right there on your car radio. There's nothing to do to find it. And if you don't like it, you hit another button or you go to the search. That's all. And we've become part of the landscape. We have become part of the landscape. And the numbers indicate that we're stronger than ever. I am anyway. KNEW, San Francisco. Sam, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Happy birthday. And keep up the good work. You're doing a lot of good out there. In fact, I think you've got exactly what the people are thinking about. There's a lot of problems out there. I'm a Vietnam vet, and I recently took a petition downtown and stood in front of a store for 5.5 hours. I got about 41 signatures on the Protect Marriage Amendment. And
Good luck. Protect Marriage with Governor Schwarzenegger Kennedy as the governor. Good luck on Protect Marriage with George Bush Strobe Talbot as president.
Exactly. We voted for it once, but I think you've coined the phrase sheeple, and I think that's where this country is headed. I mean, look at who would have thought 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, that we'd have somebody like Barack Hussein Obama running for the president of the United States? I'm a Vietnam vet, as I said.
He's like the Alfred E. Newman of politics, if you look at him. He looks like the What Me Worry character in Mad Comic, but no one's allowed to say the king has no clothes. It's the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. I'll be back.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
No ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles to get to our base.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
Reverend Wright is somebody who is like a uncle or a family member who you may strongly object to what they have to say,
but like
as he's about to retire, I have no intention.
All right, tell your story, Walking. All right, go do it somewhere else. Don't try it with me. Yeah, an uncle, crazy uncle, sure. The crazy uncle who says God D America is moving into a multi-million-dollar house that the church is building for him. He really hates America so much. Why does he move to Rhodesia? Excuse me, Zimbabwe, if he hates the country so much. He seems he's moving into a mansion there. He hates the country so much, but he likes the houses. Oh, what a bunch of garbage. That's why these people are not going to get elected. Hillary, Obama, are you kidding me? The Schmendricks at Newsweek who are losing their jobs are being bought out. The idiots at MSNBC who won't have a job in a year when they fold that network up and turn it into a sewing channel, which is what it should have been all along. Like macrame, MSNBC, more macrame by NBC. Those are the people promoting this nonsense and this rubbish. The American people see through Obama. The American people have seen through Hillary Clinton for years. That leaves us only with the schlepper. The schlepper, John McCain. And that's it. I mean, if you have a choice, you got to take him. That's all. And he'll drag us right into the New World Order because he doesn't even know it exists or where it is or how to get there. But whatever they tell him he'll do, I guarantee you. They said, break the borders. Kennedy said, come on up and have a drink. We'll have a drink. Break the borders. I'll break the borders. Whatever you want. It doesn't matter. Even though I say I'm a Rock Rib Republican, it doesn't matter. In Arizona, they don't know. They got sun poisoning of the brain. So, oh, boy, what a country. What a country. They call George Bush a conservative. He's about to socialize the banks. And yet the idiots at these left-wing papers still call him a conservative. That's the amazing thing. I don't mind you calling him a Republican, but please don't call him a conservative. What else do we have for you? Paulson, Schmolson, all aboard. Can we get a Treasury Secretary who's wealthy and made his money on his own, who's not tied into an investment bank and was bailed out by Wall Street, by the American taxpayer? Is there no such animal? Is there not an American billionaire who's self-made who's not a grifter? Is there not an American billionaire who could step in and save the country from a meltdown by this cruel pirates? It's unbelievable to me. Well, anyway, I did a couple interviews earlier today, one of which you're going to hear in a minute, with a man who does not like Obama very much. His name is Reverend James David Manning. I think you're going to find that to be a very intriguing interview. Robert, KXL, Portland, Oregon. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael. Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Sir. Yeah. It's if you're not crying, you better be laughing, or vice versa. It's so deep, it's hard to even.
Yeah, well, if you really think about what's going on, from the economy to the war that will not end, you got to ask yourself, how much longer can a nation go on like this? We don't see anybody on the horizon able to step in and save it. I don't see it. That's what worries me the most, is there's no hope tomorrow at the end of the tunnel. Who? McCain? I mean, you know I'm not going to vote for Obama or Hillary. We know that. But McCain is Bush 3. There's no question about it. He's going to continue every policy that the power structure has in place right now without any change whatsoever. We know that. So what do we got to look forward to? Tend your own garden. Tend your own garden. Don't put any money into hedge funds. Hey, by the way, how did Soros do in all of this? This is what I want to know. As you well know, Soros practically, or for all practical purposes, could be given credit for having invented the hedge fund. He made billions of dollars almost betting against the Bank of England, betting against the Malaysian currency, provoked anti-Semitism amongst moderate Muslims in Malaysia of having done so. That's an embarrassing fact of reality that I happen to know to be true. How has Soros done in all of these times? Why haven't we heard from him? Did he do well, or did he lose a few billion? Does anyone know how Soros did last week? Anyone have an answer to that? Well, we'll get to that soon, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
By this time, the world's heard the vicious, racist statements of Barack Obama's pastor, Jeremiah Wright. You've probably not heard the statements of Reverend James David Manning of Atla World Ministries. Well, let's listen to one now.
He's a Mac Daddy. He pimps white women and black women. Obama is a long-legged Mac Daddy.
Joining us in person is Reverend James David Manning. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be on your show today.
We've all heard these controversial statements you've made about Obama plastered all over the news media. Well, what actually happened?
Well, there are a number of things that happened. One was the fact that the press was not covering him in ways in which what has been generally the way we get information to make informed decisions about presidential candidates. I mean, they were just calling him a rock star and, you know, treating him as if he was a celebrity and not a serious political candidate. And I thought that was awful that the press was treating him that way. The other item is that when there was issues raised regarding his integrity or his past voting records or his character as a political figure, then people began to say such statements were racist and that because he's a black candidate, he's being overly scrutinized. And I found all that so terribly unjust. And so I began my own campaign of expressing who I thought he was and why at least black America and to a large degree why white America ought to be suspect of his candidacy.
It seems every time something is said about Obama, even remotely negative, they use the race card.
It is tragic that our society has come to this and that good people in America are allowing that to continue. That is not the issue when things are said about him, that the race card comes out. And the other item is that he is a black candidate and he's running for the office of president. And he ought to be able to stand whatever heat is applied to him, whether it seems to be racist or whether or not it is fair. And so I think it's just awful. I mean, he's being treated as if he's an affirmative action sort of candidate. You can't treat him the way you treat any other normal person. And if that's the case, then we may end up with a president who's really not qualified, and the public did not have the opportunity to question him in ways which would have given us an opportunity to see him as who he is.
With all the stories in the media, do you think we're finally getting a more fair portrayal of him?
Well, I think that some are beginning to, but he also have some very powerful defenders like the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post, and several other very powerful media outlets like CNN and the networks who know how to take whatever is negative about him and spin it so that it isn't quite so negative. In fact, it should not even be viewed as such. It should be viewed as the person who said it is the negative person, and Barack remains, you know, the godlike figure that he is. And so I'm not sure we're going to ever see criticism about him in a true light.
Obama has always struck me as a department store dummy manufactured by some other powers.
Well, you know, I think he's tried to point up a few things, but they're so vague, no one really, really is clear about them, and they don't necessarily contrast him against his Democratic opponent, Hillary Clinton. You know, but there's this entire speech or mantra he's giving about change and about hope, and which is very broad. It's more of a religious tenor type of a thing than it is a political ideology. And people are kind of swept up by that. I think there are a lot of angry white men, middle-aged to young white men who are in the middle to upper income strata, who are just angry with America. They're angry that they don't really have a voice anymore. They're in competition with women in ways in which they feel that they are not succeeding. They are angry about the war, these young to middle-aged white men. And so they are themselves becoming identified with black people and the struggles and the oppressions that black people experiencing. And that is one of the things that has catapulted his rise in popularity. But on the other hand, as I stated earlier, he's also being defended by these same liberal, if you will, white men who work for the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, Washington Post, CNN, and others. And they've joined together as a bloc to make him their presidential candidate and their president, no matter how awful he is or how good he is.
Do you think America's ready for a black president?
Well, I think that it's very difficult for a black person to be a president with all of the biases and hypocrisies that are expressed on both sides of the aisle. And I mean the racial, social aisle, not the congressional aisle. There's just a lot more work that I believe that needs to be done, such as what we presently have. Because, I mean, listen, if you say, even if you call Barack Hussein's middle name, a red flag goes up and all of the New York Times and all of its power and CNN and everybody jumps all over you for calling the man's middle name. I mean, his name is Hussein. I mean, that is what they gave him as a name. And why can't it be used as a part of a way of identifying him? And the other item is he's being treated again as an affirmative action candidate, one who you cannot apply the same measures of criticism that you can to any other candidate. But listen, the world and all the world leaders are not going to care anything about that. And the circumstances of the world, such as the economy and other social issues, are not going to look at him and say, well, because you are black, we're not going to be as severe. We'll just decide that we will not be as severe as an economic problem in America. When we shoot bullets at American soldiers, we only shoot three-fourths of a bullet because you have a black president, so we're going to be a little bit milder on you. It isn't going to happen. And so until we are able to deal with the biases and the hypocrisy, both on white from white America and black America, we're not ready for a black president.
Does Obama qualify to be that man?
No, I don't think he's qualified. I think that he is attractive to a large number of people who are angry at America. Listen, I wasn't heavily involved in the 1968 political issues of the Democratic Party, but I do remember historically what happened with the anger. And I also remember growing up. I mean, I was in my late teens and beginning my 20s in the late 60s. And we were, you know, I wasn't flower power, but white America was. But I was into rebellion and social change and free sex and love and all that. And we wanted to change America. We hated the war in Vietnam. I mean, we marched and put up Earth Day and all those kinds of things because we thought the structured America and its society and the older people, anybody over, used to be a phrase, anybody of my statement days were anybody over 35, don't trust them. So I've gone through that rebellion period at America and its government. And we have a large number of young whites who are now, we kick that age up to about 45, who are going through that same kind of rebellious period, and they're getting behind Barack because he's a rebellion candidate. He's a rebellion to the good of America. So, I mean, he just isn't ready, and he's not going to make a great president.
As far as race relations go, do you think America's better or worse compared to the 60s and 70s?
I would say for America in general, it has increased its opportunity to prosper all of its citizens, a sort of a rising tide lifts all boats to some degree. In terms of what happened with the 60s and its social movement, but specifically the civil rights movement, that the civil rights movement did change white America. It took down the colored-only signs, the white-only signs. It pretty much destroyed segregation and Jim Crow. So it changed white America drastically all throughout the South, including Mississippi and other places. White people have drastically changed from what was their approach to black and white relationships prior to the civil rights movement. What did not change were black people. They didn't change. What they did was they got worse, because prior to the 60s, black people were stronger families, had stronger churches, built strong colleges. I mean, I remember growing up in that period of time, and all we talked about was education and going to college. I mean, even if we had to work night and day to get to college, I mean, going to college, if you made it from high school to college, you were equivalent in the black community as the president of America yourself. Today, black America, in cities like Detroit, only graduate one out of every four black students graduate out of high school. And don't talk about the way blacks in ghettos and inner cities shoot and kill one another because they don't recognize the value of human life. Here in New York City, only two out of four black students graduate high school. That was unheard of years ago. 68% of all black children, as precious as they are born into a world of struggle, a world of poverty, a world of disease, because the fathers of these black children today in the year 2008 don't marry the women that they make pregnant. 70% of our households are headed by black women. That was not the case 50 years ago. We had stronger families, stronger education values, stronger social values. We have declined drastically, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so opposed to the candidacy of Barack Hussein Obama, other than the things we mentioned previously, because what black America is trying to say and supporting him as a candidate is that if he becomes president, it will mean that we are a great and a noble and a world-class people, and we don't have to do anything about the wretchedness of our own social standing at present. So we're doing worse, to answer your question.
Reverend Manning, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael, for having me on and allowing me the opportunity to speak as well. It's been really, really great.
Savage.
In a recent article, Cuba expert Humberto Fontova exposed the fact that Castro's murderous regime is not only communistic, but could be an Islamist ally as well. Humberto Fontova, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, thanks a lot for having me on.
Your recent article talks about Al Jazeera and Cuba. Give us some details.
Yeah, it's amazing, because what Al Jazeera apparently is trying to do now is they're trying to go mainstream. They're going through a makeover of sorts to make people think that they are no longer the network of terrorists, basically spokespeople for terrorists, which is the way that a lot of people rightly saw them for a while. Well, lo and behold, now they opened up an international division, and they recruited very heavily from, as luck would have it, CNN, whom Cuban Americans have always called the Castro News Network. As a matter of fact, they recruited Lucia Newman, who was formerly the Havana bureau chief for CNN. And there are quotes from her that, you know, people, you listen to these things and you wonder, but she says, oh, we will be given total freedom in Cuba to work absolutely without censorship. And she said this without a hint of tongue-in-cheek about working in a Stalinist, not just a communist country, but a Stalinist country. It takes your breath away. And then shortly after that, she says she was reporting on Cuba's elections. And she says, well, there's no mudslinging here, and there's no wasteful campaign spending here. President Castro, notice, President. Look, I follow
Cuban matters fairly closely. And I know I have not missed a presidential election, but she says, President Castro says these are the most fair elections in the world. Again, not a hint of tongue-in-cheek about this. So these are the kind of the people that Al Jazeera is bringing on board, plus they're recruiting from the BBC and from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. All of the people with leftist tendencies, all of them with definite anti-American tendencies.
They have a new magazine as well?
Well, yeah, they're coming out with a show. It's called, very inventively named, Frontline, okay? And this is following the U.S. campaign, presidential campaign. So lo and behold, one of the first episodes in this news magazine or news special is from down in Miami. Well, first of all, they went to actually to Cuba, and they were walking around and showing the dilapidated condition of Havana, buildings and so forth, and the lack of food in her markets, and isn't it? Now, of course, that was all the fault, according to Al Jazeera, of the so-called U.S. blockade, which is utterly bogus because the United States is Cuba's biggest food supplier and fourth biggest trading partner. And Cuba, not only does it not have an embargo, much less a blockade, Cuba does business with every country on earth. What happens is that all of that produce that the U.S. sells to Cuba and the rest of the world lands only in tourist enclaves. You see, it does not go to the Cuban people. It goes where the tourists buy it. But these people from Al Jazeera are making it seem like Cuba's plight, the plight of the Cuban people, is due to the nasty bully to the north, the U.S. embargo, which is utterly bogus. So then they come over and start shooting from Miami. Amazingly enough, they managed to scrounge up a couple of Cuban Americans of Democratic Party affiliation, which is very rare because Cubans in presidential elections typically vote 80 to 84, 85% Republican. You know, this isn't supposed to happen, and this enrages the left, you see, because here we're doing it. Cuban Americans have achieved a higher educational level and higher per capita income, not just higher than other so-called Hispanic groups, but higher than the American average. And they did it without any affiliation, and in fact, by spurning the Democratic Party. And this absolutely enrages the left, naturally, Al Jazeera. So they have this guy named Avi Lewis, who was formerly of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, interviewing these couple of Cuban Americans who were actually Democrats, and he's kind of sneering at them, and he's going, well, how does that such a small group of Cuban-Americans achieve so much political power in this country? Is that really democracy? And I had to laugh because, yes, the reason that they achieve this power is because they vote. You know, they are U.S. citizens, and they have a proclivity for actually going to their precincts and voting. And plus, they contribute. They are engaged in the American political system, you know, up to their necks. Hey, there's nothing like Joni Mitchell saying, don't it always know that you don't know what you got till it's gone. Well, Cubans lost that in Cuba. So here in the U.S. where they can practice that, believe me, we are very, very proud and very, very active in the democratic system. Democratic with a small D, by the way. And this annoyed Al Jazeera. How do y'all get such power? It would have been so much fun to have heard these Cuban so-called Cuban American spokesmen say, you know, we're not going to take lectures about democracy from Al Jazeera. We're not going to take lectures from an outfit that is financed by the sheikh, the Grand Sheikh of Qatar, who finances Al-Qatar from Al-Qatar, Al Jazeera. Everybody knows that. So here's a guy whose salary is being paid, Avi Lewis, by a sheikh, unelected. He got into his throne by launching a coup against his father, and he is lecturing Cuban Americans on democracy? I'm sorry. I would not have put up with it, rubbing in front of the guy. it got even crazier from then on, because they have these guys, Orlando Bosch and Luis Posada Carriles, are two Cuban-Americans who have been involved in the anti-Castro fight for decades, and they are accused by the Castro government of terrorism. But they have been acquitted of charges of terrorism in Venezuelan courts. And this was Venezuela before Hugo Chavez was running the place, when Venezuela was more or less a, you know, quasi-democratic free nation. Courts in that nation acquitted both of these gentlemen from terrorism, from the charges being made against them by Fidel Castro. And here is Al Jazeera, whose bureau chief in Kabul is actually serving an 8-year prison sentence in Spain because he was convicted as an Al-Qaeda accomplice in the subway bombings in Madrid that killed and injured thousands of people. And we're going to take a lecture on terrorism from Al Jazeera? I'm afraid not. These are just the things that amaze me, but I'm willing to bet that most of the people watching the show didn't know this, didn't have this knowledge of Cuban-American matters, so it just seemed like basically a typically leftist mainstream media show rather than an outrageously leftist one.
That must have been real difficult to watch.
Definitely. I mean, here, Al Jazeera talking about terrorism. Look, this is the same network that started out, well, let's face it, they've gotten a little more sophisticated. They would basically, in the early years, remember, they would basically hand the microphone to Osama bin Laden, hand the microphone to Mullah Omar when he still ran the Taliban. Not really hand it to him, but just let them talk at will, whatever idiocies came to their mind, whatever outrageous statements, and it would broadcast them, you know, verbatim, without absolutely any rebuttal around the world. Now, here are some Cuban-Americans engaged in the democratic process in this country, voting democratically, voting Republican, but doing it democratically, and here's Al Jazeera sneering at them as if they were terrorists. It's really, you know, it requires a sense of humor to live through these things, really.
This coming from a news organization with a spiritual leader, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, we've got the spiritual leader, Sheikh, oh my goodness, I can't even pronounce his name, but the spiritual leader of Al Jazeera has called the Palestinian suicide bombers, he has called them martyrs. Now, if you tally up the number of innocent people, many of them women and children, that have been blown to pieces, murdered, maimed by these Palestinian suicide bombers, they are, you know, many times the number that even Castro claims that those Cuban Americans are responsible for. Even if it were true, which it isn't. And so here we've got a network that gives this sheik an actual program. As a matter of fact, it is known as the most popular program on Al Jazeera, and this man bills himself as the spiritual head of Al Jazeera, and yet they're accusing us of terrorism, and here's this guy calling suicide bombers martyrs, and he's calling for the destruction of the Zionists and the American imperialists and the British imperialists. It takes your breath away.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. I greatly fear, given the temper of the times, that this Al Jazeera division will probably attain mainstream media status. You watch, you know, because really, right now, they're a little bit more extreme, but they aren't really all that different from ABC, NBC, CBS. Not when you've got Dan Rather referring to Fidel Castro as Cuba's Elvis. Not when you've got Andrea Mitchell from NBC calling Fidel Castro a very courtly gentleman. You know, I mean, there really isn't that much difference with this.
Humberto Fontova, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on, and y'all call anytime.
Savage.
We go on to the problems we're having in the country, primarily because of greed and marijuana. Red diaper doper babies pay particular attention. RDDBs, it's an acronym that I invented for my first book, or created, if you want to put it that way. We had all heard about red diaper babies, surely, but we hadn't heard of red diaper doper babies. A red diaper baby is a child raised by communist parents or communist sympathizer parents, primarily in Manhattan and Brooklyn, New York, in the 1940s and 50s. There were such parents. There still are such parents. They've created an entire generation of America haters, most of whom work for the major newspapers and television networks and in the universities. I added the D to it, red diaper doper baby, because I could not understand the madness of the virulence. I had seen the virulence of communists for a long period of time, but the madness of the virulence was something new, and that was the dope, the marijuana. And so for you red diaper doper babies out there, here's a new article that I linked up from Science Daily on michaelsavage.com. This is serious business, whether you know it or not. I'm trying to save you from your own illness. Researchers at UCLA's Johnson Cancer Center report smoking marijuana may increase risk of head and neck cancers. Now, you would think that I, as a rock rib conservative, would say, good, you should all get that. I don't say that because I really would like to help you before you kill yourself altogether. Researchers at UCLA's Johnson Cancer Center are reporting for the first time that smoking marijuana may increase the risk of head and neck cancers. The results of an epidemiological study of more than 340 people were outlined in an article published in a peer-reviewed journal called Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarker, and Prevention. Previous lab and clinical studies did indicate that marijuana use may be related to molecular alterations in the respiratory tract, changes that could have led to cancer. But this was the first study to examine whether smoking marijuana increased risk of head and neck cancer. And the scientist who did it, Dr. Zhang, said, most people don't think about marijuana in relationship to cancer, said Zhang, lead author of the journal article. The carcinogens in marijuana are much stronger than those in tobacco. The big message here is that marijuana, like tobacco, can cause cancer. But I want to pause right now. Listen to what the lead scientist is trying to tell you. The carcinogens in marijuana are much stronger than those in tobacco. I'm trying to tell you, kids, that marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs on many different levels. Now you have to understand it's more dangerous than tobacco is in terms of carcinogenicity. Dr. Zhang studied the relationship between marijuana use and head and neck cancers in 173 patients diagnosed with those diseases, and he compared those findings to 176 cancer-free control patients, and guess what he found? Those who habitually smoked marijuana were at higher risk for head and neck cancers. Now, why is this happening? Well, it's too complicated to explain, but what does that mean if you were a marijuana smoker in the 60s? And now you're a rock rib Rovian Republican. Zhang says that as habitual marijuana smokers from the 60s reach older ages, it's important for you to pay attention to this study. He said head and neck cancers, those are cancers of the mouth, tongue, larynx, and pharynx, take many years to develop. And people who smoked large amounts of pot in the 60s may just now be contracting head and neck cancer, Zhang said. Quote, in the 60s, we had very high numbers of people in their 20s smoking marijuana. These people are just now getting to the ages at which they will get head and neck cancers. This is the time to study a risk like this. See, the more times per day a person smoked marijuana or smokes it, the greater the risk. Additionally, people who use dope habitually for many years also increase their risk. If you smoke a little, your risk increases a little. If you smoke a lot, your risk increases a lot. Now, as you well know, marijuana is the most commonly used illegal drug in the United States. It is estimated that about 31% of the U.S. population 12 years or older has used marijuana, according to the journal article. 31%. And now we have evidence that may link marijuana smoking to head and neck cancers. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Red diaper dopa babies in particular pay careful attention to this study. You can link it up from michaelsavage.com and judge for yourself whether you want to believe your dope dealer or you want to believe the scientists who study cancer. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. There are many other topics up there. Here are some of them on michaelsavage.com. Feds arrest dozens of illegals employed as security guards. California should celebrate March 31st as Dr. Michael Savage Day. That's today, my birthday. Child genius at Oxford worked as prostitute. That's a great story. A child prodigy with a talent in mathematics. Prodigy now. Genius at Oxford. A child prodigy with a talent in mathematics that won her a spot at Oxford at the age of 13 years old somehow found her way into prostitution. Sophia Yusuf, who calls herself Shilpa Lee, now advertises her body on an internet sex site charging £130 an hour, $258. Yusuf and two siblings won university places in their teens, but she ran away at age 15 with claims of pressure from her parents. So here she is. Yusuf on the internet describes herself as a sexy, smart student, prefers, quote, older gentlemen, and offers services every day from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Well, who knows? I can't say it was marijuana, but I wouldn't doubt that it was marijuana. Marijuana does weird things to people. Just take a look at the politicians today, particularly the liberals, particularly the so-called journalists who are now, after running their publications into the ground, are being laid off like lemmings, the lemmings that they've always been. Newsweek, Slate, Salon, all of these flash in the pans are soon going to be gone. And last but not least, left on the horizon will be talk radio. I can guarantee you we'll be around long after these red diaper dopa babies are gone. The problem is the politicians themselves, many of them are red diaper dopa babies. You don't have to go too far to find an answer to that question, where they may be housed, who they are, and things of that nature. It's the red diaper doper babydom of the United States of America that has put us in the position we're in. Make no mistake about it. Marijuana is not only the entry drug, it is also the most dangerous of all drugs, because your child, maybe yourself, thinks that it is innocuous. It is not. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.